Chapter 4. Now the previously mentioned Simon, who was the informer about the money against his own fatherland, also spoke badly of Honiah, saying,
"He was the one who incited Heliodoros and instigated the evil affair."
And he dared to brand as a plotter against the government the man who was the benefactor of the city and the protector of his compatriots and a zealous defender of the laws. But when Simon's enmity reached to such a degree that even murders were being committed by one of his henchmen, Honiah saw that this love of strife was serious, and that Apollonios, son of Menesthus, the general of Cilicia in Phoenicia, was abetting Simon's villainy. So he went over to the king, not as an accuser of his countrymen, but as a man looking to the common and private good of the entire multitude. For he saw that, without the king's foresight, it would be impossible to have peace in the state affairs, and that Simon would not desist from his folly. But Seleucus died, and when Antiochus, surnamed the Illustrious, succeeded him in the kingdom, Honiah's brother, Jason, obtained the chief priesthood by corrupt means. In an interview, he promised the king 360 talents of silver, as well as 80 talents from another source of income. But in addition to this, he agreed to pay 150 more if authority was given to him to establish a school for naked athletics, along with a youth club for it, and to enroll the men in Jerusalem as Antiochians. But when Jason received the king's approval and became chief, he immediately shifted his countrymen into the Hellenic way of life. And he set aside the royal concessions granted to the Judeans through the mediation of Johanan, father of Eupolemos, that Eupolemos who would later go on as an elder to the Romans to establish a friendship and alliance with them, and he abrogated the lawful institutions and introduced unlawful customs. For he quickly established a school for naked athletics at the very foot of the summit city, and he induced the noblest young men to wear the broad-brimmed hat. Now, through the outrageous wickedness of Jason, who was impious and certainly no chief priest, the craze for Hellenism and foreign customs reached to such a pitch that the priests no longer cared about the service of the altar. Instead, disdaining the inner sanctum and neglecting the sacrifices, they hastened, at the signal for discus throwing, to take part in the unlawful exercises in the wrestling arena. And indeed, they despised what their fathers had regarded as honors, while they highly prized the Hellenic forms of glory. And for this reason, a severe disaster encompassed them. And the very people whose manner of life they emulated and whom they desired to imitate in everything became their enemies and avengers. For it is no light matter to be impious toward the laws of God, as the following period will make clear. Now, when the quinquennial games were being held at Tyre, and the king was present, the vile Jason sent ambassadors as representatives of the Antiochians of Jerusalem to carry 300 silver drachmas for the sacrifice to Hercules. And the bearers themselves thought that the money should not be spent on a sacrifice, as that was not appropriate, but should be used for some other purpose. Therefore, indeed, the contribution had been destined by the sender for the sacrifice to Hercules, but it was in fact applied, by those who brought it, to the construction of triremes. Now when Apollonios, son of Menestheus, was sent to Egypt for the coronation of King Ptolemaios, the mother lover, Antiochus learned that the king was opposed to his affairs. So he took measures for his own security. After arriving at Yafo, he proceeded to Jerusalem. But there, he was welcomed magnificently by Jason and the city, and was received with torchlights and acclamations. After this, he stationed his army in Phoenicia. Now, after a period of 3 years, Jason sent Menelaus, brother of the previously mentioned Simon, to deliver the money to the king and to complete records on some essential matters. But when he had been introduced to the king, he flattered him with such an air of authority that he secured the chief priesthood for himself, outbidding Jason by 300 talents of silver. Now Menelaus returned with the royal instructions, indeed, with nothing that made him worthy of the chief priesthood. But he had the fury of a cruel tyrant and the anger of a wild beast. And indeed, Jason, who had undermined his own brother, was undermined by another man, driven out as a fugitive into the country of the Ammonites. Now Menelaus had indeed taken hold of the primacy, but he did not make any payments of the money he had promised to the king. But Sostratos, the prefect of the summit city, kept demanding payment, for the collection of the taxes was his responsibility. So both of them were summoned before the king on this charge. And indeed, Menelaus left his own brother, Lysimachos, as his substitute in the chief priesthood, while Sostratos left Crates, commander of the Cuprians, as his substitute. Now, while these things were taking place, it happened that the Tarsians and the Malotians rose in revolt because they had been given as a gift to Antiochus, the king's concubine. Therefore, the king went off in haste to settle matters, leaving Andronikos, one of his nobles, to act as his substitute. But Menelaus, believing this to be a favorable opportunity, stole some gold vessels from the temple and presented them to Andronikos. He had already sold some other vessels in both Tyre and in the surrounding cities. And when Honaya had clear evidence of the facts, he made a public protest, having first withdrawn to a place of refuge at Daphna, near Antiochia. For this reason, Menelaus, taking Andronikos aside, begged him to take Honaya into his hands. But resorting to treachery, Andronikos went to Honaya and welcomed him with his right hand and gave him his right hand in oath. Although Honaya held him in suspicion, Andronikos was able to persuade him to leave the place of refuge. Then, without any regard for righteousness, he immediately put him out of the way. As a result, not only Judeans, but also the other nations, were indignant and displeased over the unrighteous murder of the man. Now when the king returned from the region of Cilicia, Judeans from the city, together with the Hellenes who shared their detestation, complained to him, giving the account of how Honaya had been done away with. Therefore, Antiochus was grieved from his soul and was moved to pity. And he wept as he recalled the moderation and good conduct of the deceased. And inflamed with fury, he immediately stripped Andronikos of his purple robe and tore off his garments and had him led through the whole city to the very place where he had committed the outrage against Honaya. There, he dispatched the blood-stained man, the Lord repaying him with the punishment he deserved. Now many sacrilegious thefts had been committed in the city by Lysimachos with the connivance of Menelaus. And when the declaration was spread that a large number of gold vessels had been stolen, the multitude convened in protest against Lysimachos. But since the crowds, now full of anger, were becoming stirred up, Lysimachos armed about 3,000 men and launched an unrighteous attack against them under the command of Aurinos, a man advanced in years, but no less in folly. But when the Judeans also became aware of Lysimachos' attack, they indeed picked up rocks, but some pieces of wood, but others handfuls of ashes lying there, to hurl them in wild confusion at Lysimachos' party. As a result, they indeed wounded many of them, but even struck down a few, but put the rest of them to flight. But the sacrilegious thief himself, they overpowered near the treasury. But charges about this incident were brought against Menelaus. Now when the king came to Tyre, three men sent by the body of seniors made a speech to defend the righteousness of their cause. But Menelaus, seeing himself on the losing side, promised Ptolemaios, son of Dorumenes, considerable money in order to win the king over. For this reason, Ptolemaios, taking the king aside into a colonnade as if to refresh themselves, induced the king to change his mind. And indeed, the king dismissed Menelaus of what he had been accused of, the man who was the cause of all the evil. But he condemned to death those poor men who would have been released without criticism, even if they had pleaded their case before Scythians. Therefore, the unrighteous punishment was quickly inflicted upon the men who had prosecuted the case for the city and villages, and for the sacred vessels. For this reason, even some Tyrians were indignant over the wickedness and provided magnificently for their burial. But Menelaus, because of the covetousness of the chiefs, remained in office, where he grew in villainy and became a great plotter against his fellow citizens.